Om Jnanatamrandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. For those of you who don't know who I am, I'm Drew Lawrence. And I do, among other things, I do Vedic astrology. And I've been doing Vedic astrology for some 34 years. I studied it from the original Sanskrit. I became interested in yoga and yoga philosophy. I had a bit of a spiritual awakening at the age of 19. And that led me to yoga and Eastern philosophy. So I sort of got very serious about that at that time. And one thing led to another. I began to study Sanskrit, and from there I went into astrology. And I don't know if I've mentioned this in the past, but the reason I went into astrology was never, ever to become an astrologer. That was never my plan. The only reason I studied it is because I found some prayers and rituals known as sangskaras in the Vedic literatures. And sangskara would be equivalent to sacrament in, you know, well, in Catholicism or Judaism. And those would be rites of passage, you know, like baptism, things like this. So I studied sangskaras, translated them from Sanskrit into English, and at the time was very keen on bringing enlightened souls into the world through pregnancy and childbirth. I felt if you're going to have a child, the child should be someone who is an addition to the planet and is not a subtraction. So with that in mind, I translated these ceremonies, rituals, but it said in all of them, you must do this at a certain time, astrologically. I said, oh, well, what am I going to do? I know nothing about that. So I was compelled. I had to go study that to learn that, so I could do it exactly the way it said. And so that's what I did. I had a wife who was very cooperative, and she also had the same idea as I did, or same desire. And so that's what we did. And I'd like to think that I could explain it to you astrologically, but that may not make a lot of sense to you if you're not familiar with it. But it has worked pretty well, pretty effectively. So that's why I got into it. And then one thing leads to another, and you have this knowledge, and people go, would you look at my chart, my birth chart? And then it sort of took on a life of its own. And I went through different careers and junctures in my life. And at one particular juncture, I didn't know what to do. What would I do when I grew up? And was already doing astrology, but kind of on the side. Excuse me. So my friends who knew me well laughed and said, well, isn't it obvious to you what you should be doing? I said, no. Because it's never obvious to you now, is it? It's obvious to other people. When you're looking from this perspective out, when you're subjective, you don't have the objectivity. You don't possess it. You know, that's why it's always easier for someone else to see you more so than yourself, because you're too wrapped up in it. So anyway, my two close male friends, not female friends, by the way, because we all know that women are more into astrology than men are. We know this. But these were male friends. And they said, oh, well, it's obvious. You should be doing astrology. That's what you should do. I said, what do you mean, like full-time, in a business-like manner? And they said, yeah, that's what you should do. I said, well, I don't really want to do that. Because, you know, I'm a serious guy. I don't want to be thought of as airy-fairy and touchy-feely and... because I'm not really like that. And they didn't say this, but I came to realize that things are what you make them. You know. So what happened was, I went forward, and I began to conduct that as my career. And it took off. Next thing I know, I'm flying around the world. I'm going to all these countries. I'm on TV and radio and newspapers and who knew? You know? I didn't ask for it, but there it was. And I've learned many, many valuable lessons in the scheme of things. And whatever it is you do, it is what you make it. So if I thought astrology was airy-fairy and people wouldn't take it seriously, it's because other people presented it in that manner, not me. So if I present it the way I present it, then people will accept it from me the way I present it, and it'll be different. And that's exactly the way it has unfolded. And I've been blessed to meet the top people in their fields in pretty much every walk of life. Many of them are my clients. And I've had many hardcore, left-brain, rational, logical businessmen, Fortune 500 people, CEOs of big corporations, who wouldn't look at astrology if you paid them, having met me, would get their chart done or would be open to the idea and now have become clients. So that too, I take it as a great blessing. And it's not so much about the astrology, it's about communication. If you have some knowledge, and everybody has some knowledge in some field that has value, and if you don't think you do, then maybe you're not looking closely enough, or maybe you're not giving yourself some credit. Everybody has some knowledge, something of value, and it can be of value to others, so it needs to be presented correctly, always according to time and circumstance. You know, you can't. If I was standing in front of you in a purple long flowing robe, I don't think it would have the same effect. You know what I mean? So it's time and circumstance. And I've done many talks dressed in a business suit and tie, naturally. Not today, however. So that's kind of my story, or a part of it. And Vedic astrology is the original system of astrology. I apologize to those of you who kind of already know this, but I'll just go through it briefly. This is not Western astrology that you find in the newspaper under horoscopes. This is the original system dating back to 3000 BC, India, coming from the books known as the Vedas. Many of you know what the Vedas are. For those of you that don't, they are Sanskrit literatures, and they deal with, honestly, every subject under the sun, but primarily what we're familiar with is the science of karma, yoga, reincarnation, and self-realization. So I studied both Western and Vedic because I'm sort of a guy who doesn't take things at face value, and nor should you. I don't expect you to accept what I say just because I said it, nor would I accept what you say just because you said it. You put it to the test. That's what an intelligent person does. And I determined that Vedic astrology was more accurate and more comprehensive than Western astrology. And so that's why I began with Vedic astrology and stayed with it for 34 years. There is a difference in calculation between the two systems, as we all know. Western astrology, that we find in the newspaper, millions of people follow it. Millions. Well, millions of people can't be wrong, can they? Yes, they can. They can. Now, it's not to say that Western astrology has no efficacy. It does have efficacy. But there is one fundamental tiny problem. It isn't calculated correctly. Now, of course, this could be a he said, she said. Oh, well, the Vedic astrology says this, you're wrong, and Western astrology says you're wrong. You know, stop, you're both wrong. However, modern day scientists, that is, astronomers, will tell you that the Western calculation is incorrect. Just recently, maybe 3 months ago, there was a big splash on the news about some guy had figured out that the Western zodiac was wrong. I don't know if you remember that. That's the most recent example of it. It is wrong. It's incorrect. But still, there's some efficacy in Western astrology. But as I say, I think Vedic is more accurate. Okay. So that's what I did. I studied Vedic astrology.
Excuse me, Drew. I remember one time, I think you said that the Western astrology came from the Greeks.
Yeah.
And wasn't there one calculation that was left out in their calculations of the original Greek Western astrology?
Well, the Greeks got astrology from the Indians. Hindus, if you like. Hindus is too small a word for my satisfaction.
Where did the Egyptians come in?
Well, the Indians traveled all over, if you study that history. And they were very aggressive in trade. And so they went over to Greece, and they brought with them their culture. They went over to Greece. They went to lots of places. They went to Egypt. They went to many places. There's an excellent book on this and tells you the history of Vedic civilization, the true history. Because the history that they teach you in school was that put forth by the Christian Europeans who wanted to denounce or disempower the real Vedic history by saying that the white-skinned Aryans came in from the north. And they started the whole Vedic thing, which had been going, of course, for thousands of years before that. But this is the typical thing that, conquerors do, and they rewrite history to suit themselves. I understand in the Soviet Union now, they are rewriting the rewritten history to make it reflect what actually went on. Sans Politburo. Song communists. So, that's what they do. It's disinformation and propaganda. So it was the same thing with this Aryan invasion theory, is what they call it. Absolute nonsense. And that, I don't want to get into too much of that. I'll get wound up. Okay. So, yeah, it migrated to Greece, but when anything migrates from one place to another, it becomes changed or altered. What doesn't? So also from one language to another, from one place to another, it becomes altered. And so the Greeks ended up with a version of the original. And that's, they say, here in our world, our culture, that the Greeks are the fathers of astrology. And they are the fathers of Western astrology, but something's missing. You know, just like they say Pythagoras is the father of mathematics, or is it geometry?
Geometry.
Trigonometry.
Yeah, he has that rule that 3, 4, 5, the triangle.
Yeah, Chelsea. You got the right persons here.
Too much left brain.
Too much left brain. No, it's okay. But, the original interest that he had was numerology. So he was interested in the mystical and spiritual aspects, first and foremost, before he was interested in the physical or mathematical aspects.
Music was another one.
And music.
And big things, but it was also as a way to get to the spiritual realm.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it's... Come on in. Come on. It's the song of the universe, isn't it? It's the song of the spheres.
Music of the spheres.
Music of the spheres. You know, it's the law of sevens. You know the law of sevens, right?
Hey there. Pull up the chair.
I thought you weren't going to be, like, sitting down formally so we could sneak in.
Oh, you can sneak in. We didn't see you.
Let's sneak in. Wait, first you have to sing.
Everyone else has already
done it. Was all
What George did for us.
Okay.
Thanks, George.
Good. Hi.
How are you?
Good.
So, the law of sevens is, interestingly, 7 days of the week, seven chakras of the body, seven notes in the scale, seven major planets. What else?
Didier's birthday.
What? There's a few more. I just can't think of them all right now.
Seven continents.
Seven?
Continents.
Seven continents. Seven seas.
Change every 7 years, they say.
Your body changes cells every 7 years. And you go through, 7 years, age 7, age 14, age 21, age 28. These are all major...
And 28 days for the female body, right?
Correct. Correct. That's the moon cycle. So that's how you get...
Seven cardinal sins.
Yeah, okay.
Some of you're rich.
Okay, see, now it's out of hand, you see? She mentions the sins and he's with the itch.
Just because she said it, I wouldn't have said it.
So, you see, for example, the 7 days of the seven colors of the spectrum. So we have seven major planets. We have Sun, Moon, Mars, Mercury in the middle, Jupiter, Venus, Saturn, right? Sunday, Sun, Monday, Moon, Lunes, Lundi, Tuesday is Mars, Martes. What do you say in France? En français?
Mardi.
That's Mars. Tuesday, Wednesday, Miércoles. Mercredi. Mercury. Thursday, Thor's day. And that's Jupiter. How do you say it? Jueves.
That's Friday, I think.
And what is it in French again?
Jeudi.
Vendredi is Friday. Venus. And in Spanish?
Viernes.
Samedi, Saturday. What is it?
Sabado.
Saturn's day. We say Saturn's day. We say it directly. And dimanche, domingo, I'm back to the beginning, but there you go. So, sun is the red ray, moon is the orange ray, Mars is the yellow ray, Mercury is the perfect balance, green. Ho, I wonder what color I'll make all the trees and plants. Green. These are the hot colors, red, orange, yellow, green. That's the healer. That's the transformer. And then blue, indigo, violet. Jupiter is blue, indigo is Venus, and violet is Saturn. Now we have on this side infrared and ultraviolet. Can you see those? No. K2, Rahu. See, in Vedic astrology, we use nine planets. We use the seven major planets. plus the moon's nodes. We don't use Uranus, Neptune, Pluto. Pluto got a downgrade in case you hadn't heard. Chiron got an upgrade in case you hadn't heard. We don't use those. So infrared is K2 because it acts like it's fire energy. And ultraviolet is Rahu, which acts like Saturn in some ways. So there you go. For example. So astrology is what? I mean, really, what is it? Your birth chart is a map of your karma. It's a karmic map. And what we do know and what we can agree on is the following. And I don't care what culture you go to, any culture, you can go to a primitive culture, you can go to a technologically advanced culture, you can go to a literate culture or an illiterate culture, and everybody agrees on one thing. What goes around comes around. Who disagrees with that? Nobody. Because we all know it, we've all seen it, right? And what is your birth chart but an example of what goes around comes around? And there it is. So astrology shows you how the karma will be realized or experienced or unfolded in this lifetime. Where does it come from? The actions and behaviors you did before the age of two? No. You were born into this world and this was in place, this karmic map. And there are those, I just talked to this wonderful Ayurvedic doctor we've been studying with in Ireland. She's from India. She's an Ayurvedic doctor and she's a GP. She studied both side by side in a 5-year program. She's a very nice lady. She comes from my Indian Brahmin family. So she told me, I always was under the impression that the first breath when you come out of the womb starts the wheel. I always thought that. She said, no, it is not like that. Only you're cutting the cord. Then simply the karma is going. So she said, once you cut the cord.
Oh, cut the cord.
Yeah. You don't understand my accent?
I thought you said cut the cord.
Cut the cord. Once you cut the cord, you choose one cord. Only. So once you cut the cord, she said, that's when. Because the mother and the baby are now. So I'm not exactly convinced about that, but, you know, I'm open. So it shows you how the karma is unfolding. It shows you your major lessons in this lifetime. It shows you your strengths, your weaknesses. I always smile, and no offense, but, you know, people have the 1-year plan, they have the 5-year plan, they got the 10-year plan. Sounds good. Do some people realize those plans? Yes, some people do. Does everybody? No, not everybody. So astrology is based on, Vedic astrology is based on a 120-year life cycle. So here is the 120-year plan, ladies and gentlemen. Take a look. Now, those of you who know me or know about Vedic astrology, who are clients of mine, know what we're talking about here. We're talking about major planetary periods, minor planetary periods. We can divide it down, sub-periods, sub-sub, and they break it down. So you have might have a major Saturn period with a minor Venus period with a sub-Mars period. It's all operating simultaneously, right? You might have an hour, and within that hour you have a minute. Within that minute you have a second. That's how time works. It's subdivided that way, right? But they take it all the way down to a A breath. Swara. Every breath you take is ruled by a particular planet. Now, that you would call surgical astrology. I don't do that. It's too much, but there it is, if you're interested. Each breath. And you might be curious to know that according to yoga philosophy, each and every soul who takes birth at the time of their birth has X amount of breaths. And when you finish breathing that last breath, you're done. You're finished.
That's a bummer for those long distance runners, huh?
Exactly. It is.
Stop that running.
It is a bummer for the runner. Running, not a good idea. You're exhausting a lot of breaths. Walking, maybe better. Well, you know what the yogis do? I mean the real yogis. I don't mean the aerobic yogis. I mean the yogis like in India. What they do, they neutralize the breath. They neutralize or, what's the other verb they use? Suspend. The incoming breath with the outcoming breath when they breathe it in, and they practice holding it. Breathing it in is called puraka. Holding it is called kumbhaka. Kumbha means like a pot, full lungs. And rechaka is expelling. So when they breathe it in, they hold it. And the idea is to hold it longer. And longer and longer. Very slowly you build, build, build. So some of them, they can sit there all day and not breathe. Now they're not active, let's be clear. They're not running around doing errands. They're not catching an airplane, okay? At least not that kind of airplane. They are sitting in one place, very peaceful, normally skinny as a rake. And that's how you sustain your breath. That's why these yogis, maybe like our friend Arnold here, will live to 100, 200, 300 years old. Is it possible? Yes. Is it possible for you? Why not? It's up to you. If you want to go down that path. Okay, so we have the map of the karma. Does it work? Pretty much. I mean, I probably looked at least over 100,000 charts by now. You know, easily. And it works. I find the planetary periods, you know, they're subject to some degree of interpretation, which is on the shoulders of the interpreter. But I find that they work, if we have an accurate birth time, in about 90-95% of the cases. You know, at least you should be able to say many things that are correct, accurate, sound, and they happen.
So are you saying that the accuracy is that the karma can be predicted and then people give you feedback and it's accurate what's happened in their lives?
Correct.
And is it done on a transit method like in Western?
No, it's done in on these. Well, yes, it is, but that's a good question. The first thing it's done on is the planetary periods, which are not known in Western astrology. Mm-hmm. And these are calculated based on the moon's degree at the time of birth. There are 27 constellations in the sky. We divide the sky, the 360-degree ecliptic, into 27 constellations. Well, you all know Orion and Cassiopeia, etc. Well, these are the same star groupings, but they don't have those names. Those are the Greek names. And, you know, what do they know? We divide them according to increments of 13 degrees and 20 minutes. 13 degrees, 20 minutes times 27 is 360 degrees. So you don't only have the 30 degrees of signs, you've got all of these constellations. And these are also very important. So depending which constellation the moon is in and what degree it's at, that tells us what planetary period you're beginning in and how much of that period has been exhausted at the time of your birth. Like, for example, a moon period is 10 years long. So when you come out of the womb, you just don't start at 0 degrees of the next 10-year period. You might be, let's take the constellation of Rohini, which goes from, and actually goes from 10 degrees of Taurus, I think it starts. Anyway, it's 13 degrees, 20 minutes long. And it's ruled by the moon. So if your moon is in the constellation of Rohini, which is where I think it is today, as a matter of fact, in the sky, then you would have an exalted moon in Taurus, constellation of Rohini, and you might have not 10 years left, you might have 7 years and 7 years and 5 months and 12 days remaining in your major period of the moon. This is all calculated.
So the moment of now, say this today, this breath, then that would be able to be calculated.
It's all calculated. When I hand it to you, it's the whole 120 years is there with all the things.
So, okay, so normal reading in Western astrology is from the birth sign, and you get all this information about your birth sign. Then a transit reading means...
No, now we also use the transits.
Okay, so
also
putting on the planets onto the natal chart.
Correct.
And telling you what's up now.
Right.
Okay.
As well as the planetary periods, as well as the constellations.
Okay. So
and then we read from the main chart, the moon chart, and the Navamsa chart.
Okay. Since I don't speak Vedic, I don't know all the...
I know. I understand.
All that. Your reading is done so that we could understand... Obviously, it must be so you can understand this. Because
is it done so you can understand?
Yeah.
Language.
Yeah, and it's, I was...
I don't... I'm not top...
My own experience, you know, it's... you know, he says... He gives, you know, you have a printed chart and it shows all your planets, all that, but he breaks down the periods and usually, you know, an overall chart, and then most of us get updates once a year. So you can, you know, he'll say, so between this time and this time, you know, you might want to really be careful of your health, and because you're in this planet, you should be concerned about your lungs because this planet means lungs, represents lungs. Or good times for working, or not to spend money, or, you know, many, many, you know, common things that we would like to know about our lives.
Yeah,
and
it's got to be practical.
Relationships, work, money.
Yeah, human stuff. Human stuff is important. And the planetary periods are a window in which certain things are likely to happen. For example, you go into a Venus period, you're either going to meet somebody, or if you're in relationship, that relationship will deepen. It will become more committed. We might go, cohabit, or we might become engaged. We might plan the wedding. We might get married, for example, in a Venus period. And if you're not with somebody, you're likely to meet somebody. I could say safely that 75% of the people walking around out there went into relationship in a Venus period. I could show that to you in their charts. So, you know, that's kind of how it works. That's a real simple example, because Venus is fairly obvious.
So, Drew, does that mean that, you know, in Western astrology you have the trines and the squares and...
That's a good question. That system is actually called the Tajika system in Vedic astrology. So it is one of the systems. There are so many different systems in Vedic astrology. I mean, I use what I use because it works for me, but there are many, many more. And that's one of them. So that is used exclusively in Western astrology, but it came also from India. you know. So, yeah, that's how it works. But I try to speak to people in a way that communicates it effectively and not too much astro speak. You know, I like to say what planets are, so you can make a connection at least, and then you'll begin to learn about it. You know, if I say, well, you're about to go on a Saturn period, and then for the next 3 years, and that becomes the worst 3 years of your life, and next time I tell you you're going to Saturn period, you'll remember that. For example. You know. Let me tell you this. I looked at I usually do the different countries' yearly charts. So you can do yearly charts. They call it mundane astrology for countries. You calculate it using the capital city. I won't get into all the details because it'll bore you, but. So they usually work pretty good. And with that in mind, in 2008, I said that there was going to be a financial crash based on looking at the U.S. chart. And I put it on my website before it happened. I put it on my website in the fall. And then it all fell apart, as we know, more so than any of us would have imagined, I think. So that was there, and it was an accurate prediction, because Jupiter, the planet of wealth and finance and cash flow and economy, was conjoined with Rahu, a shadow influence in the sky. And the combination of Jupiter and Rahu is a combination for bankruptcy. So does it mean you have to go bankrupt? Not necessarily, but if you're heading in that direction anyway, chances are you'll probably arrive there, right? So I can tell people, be careful, you know, don't be careless with your money, don't overspend, don't take risks that you're not sure of, and we avoid bankruptcy. But in this case, it had reached critical mass. And off we went. Now, this is what I was going to tell you. So, the election was looming. I think looming is a good term. And John McCain and Barack Obama, their names had come up. They were the candidates. So, I'm trying to predict the election. And I'll be honest with you, I am neither a Democrat nor a Republican, because I'm a spiritual guy, and a spiritual guy, you don't take sides, because then you're caught up in dualities. This is good, this is bad, pros and cons, and attachment or repulsion are both causes for bondage in spiritual understanding. So middle path, not attached to either side. So, knowing that all this stuff was happening, or is going to happen, with the economy, I looked at John McCain's chart, and I saw that John McCain was going into one of the best periods of his life. And the chart of the leader is very, very important. The chart of the inception of the country, you can also look at that. As you can look at the inception chart of anything, your birth chart is an inception chart. It's a beginning point. You can look at the inception chart of a company. And believe me, if you're going to file a DBA, if you're going to start a company, when you start it, I cannot tell you how important it is. It is absolutely the most important thing if you want to succeed. Now, if you have good karma, you will unconsciously do it at the right time. It will succeed. If you don't have good karma, well, that's another story. Okay, so John McCain was going into one of the best periods of his life. Well, he's not going to become president because it's about to hit the fan. It doesn't make any sense that a guy with this karma, because, boy, he'll turn everything around, whether you like John McCain or not. I thought, well, that'd be good if he got elected. It would be promising. Then I looked at Barack Obama's chart. And I was in London speaking at the British Association of Vedic Astrology. I was the featured speaker. And there was a lady there who was waving an Obama flag. I don't know what that meant exactly, but I'm teasing. And she was so into Obama. And I pointed out that Obama has a debilitated Jupiter on the ascendant, the weakest it could be, along with Saturn. And, you know, he's got that Abe Lincoln look. Very tall, very thin, you know, like Abe Lincoln. And that Abe Lincoln had Saturn on the ascendant. And so does Barack Obama. So there's a kind of look, you know. So there you are. So that helps you to understand, oh, yeah, that looks like the guy. That's how he should be looked. You can just give him the beard. So he had the debilitated Jupiter with Saturn. And I'm going, and we're about to go into this this financial morass. And I'm going, this ain't the guy for the job. This guy is not going to be able to turn it around financially. And that's what I said. And this woman said, oh, no, no. I've seen many people with debilitated Jupiter. They were very good money managers. I said, oh, have you? And that's about all I said. I said, well, I don't agree with you. So, in Barack Obama's chart, he was getting inaugurated in January. In March, he was going into 3.5 years of the worst periods of his life. 3.5 years.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
2.5 years, Rahu in the eighth house. Eighth house means difficulties, stumbling blocks, obstacles, problems, unforeseen problems coming at you. And then that was followed by a Mars period for 1 year, also in the eighth house, which I just told you what the eighth house meant. But Mars means, Mars is action. It's like unwise action. Rahu would mean he doesn't do anything. And Mars means he's doing the wrong thing. He's acting at cross purposes. Well, that's kind of how it went. So that's why I predicted him to win, because I already knew what was going to happen with the economy, you see. And here was the guy that was going to be the face of that. And sure enough, you can disagree with me. It's no problem.
What kind of a period is he coming into?
Well, that's interesting. See, that's a good question. Because he's going in, just, this is what, well, here's the irony. 6 months before the election, he goes into a Jupiter period, which actually is probably going to be his turnaround, and he'll resurrect himself. He's probably going to get reelected, you know. Maybe he'll do something right.
That would be
okay,
good.
Janet.
Bye, Janet.
See ya. Good seeing you.
Say hi to Didier. Okay.
So.
Is Paul Volcker one of your clients?
Paul Volcker? No, he's not one of.
He also predicted it in The Economist magazine.
Yeah.
Way before it happened.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm not the. There's several people that predicted it. Yeah, using different methods, you know. You know, they ought to be my clients. Yeah, I know that Timothy Geithner ought to be my client.
Now, if Barack had known, maybe he wouldn't have signed up.
Yeah, poor guy.
Or,
I heard the other day that Susie Orman said she didn't think the housing market was going to rebound until 2023.
Yeah.
How does that look for our country's chart?
Well, I don't. Yeah, this is what I was going to tell you. You see, usually when you do the country's chart for the year, you know, it makes sense. There's some feasibility and, you know, a recognition of what actually happens. So this year I did the chart. It starts in March, by the way, for everybody. March, April.
How is that?
Because vernal equinox right now is not Aries, it's Pisces. Because of the precession of the equinoxes. And this is why the Western calculation isn't correct. So it goes backwards 50 seconds each year. Like this. So now, if this is 0 degrees Aries and they say on or about March 21st of every year, the sun enters 0 degrees of Aries, first day of spring, off we go. First day of the zodiac, 0 degrees Aries, right? But because the Earth, when it spins on its axis, has a slight wobble, it causes that equinoctial point to regress, to go backwards.
5 degrees.
50 seconds a year. Now you're talking degrees, minutes, seconds. You always say, oh, that's nothing. Oh no, this is astronomy. Hello. Yeah, no, it's big. So right now, it's 23 degrees backwards. So if you go 23 degrees backwards from 0 degrees Aries, you find yourself in 6 degrees of Pisces, won't you?
Yeah. 6 degrees of separation.
He's got all the buzzwords.
Well, Drew, and I know for some of us who our birth sign are our...
That's why your birth sign isn't a previous sign.
Yeah.
Goes
for
backward.
For example, mine is instead of Western is Scorpio, but in Vedic it's Libra.
That's why. That's exactly why. Okay. But that's the correct calculation. That's, you know, what I started saying at the beginning. So... when you calculate Pisces, when Sun and Moon are the exact degree together. Why Sun and Moon are the exact degree? They call that the Chaitya Shukla Paksha, which means, look at it in this sense, it's actually a beautiful metaphor. Sun is male energy, Sun is the father energy, Moon is female energy, mother energy. And when Sun and Moon come together exact degree, they conceive. If you want to conceive something, the best time to conceive is on the new moon, when Sun and Moon are together and together, and we conceive. So that's the day. That's the day. That's the moment. And that's when you calculate these charts. For, you know, you say Washington, D.C., this degree, and whatever country, you take the capital. So here's the point. So I looked at the U.S. chart this year. I saw five planets in the 11th house. Ka-ching, 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 ka-ching. And I'm going, wow, wonderful year. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to turn around. Not. It didn't happen. Has it happened since March? Have you seen it? I haven't. Apart from Silicon Valley, they're doing pretty well. There's more and more jobs going on there. They're building and expanding. The housing market's flat, as far as I know. The banks aren't lending. So, no. It didn't work. We are in such a malaise that we haven't seen the other end of what we're in. So even the yearly chart makes no sense. So the only other thing that I could think of to do is to look at the leader's chart. Because the leader's chart is very, very important. Just like the leader of a corporation's chart is very important. So people call you up and say, I'm going to go into business with so-and-so. Okay. What's it look like? So we do a little question chart on it, on the question itself. Really, we want to look at so-and-so's chart to see what kind of karma they're about to go through. Now, if so-and-so is about to hit the skids and go through the worst period of their life, maybe you should find a different partner. Because you're going to ride that wave onto the sand. And you don't want that. So the leader's karma is very important. Very important. And you see businesses rise and fall. And you know, anything from a small business, one person, to two persons, up to 2,000 persons, or a couple million people that might work for a company. It's the leader. So if you look at Obama's chart, oh yeah, okay, well there you go. Now it makes sense. But honestly, over the years I've looked at the country charts and they've been pretty accurate, but not this year.
Now I'm curious now, the perspective. Now, as time goes on, do we have a way of looking at things maybe a little differently? Because if we use the same rules or same perspective, then it might be 20 years old or whatever. Isn't it a little harder to apply it to today? Because, like that question about, you know, just homes for sale and home, you know, building, whatever. What happens if that adjustment is really more of something that could be good in a way, that maybe we got too far or over to one?
Well, I agree with you there.
And the balance, you know, is kind of...
Oh, no, I totally agree with you there. But still, what the chart reflects, it should reflect a period of prosperity. That's what
overall.
I'm saying. Overall.
Right.
And most of the struggle, according to that, should... At least we should be emerging from it. We're not really. Not in any significant way. You know, there's some people that are, but... Not that I've seen.
And the masses.
Yeah, you know.
So you said Obama's chart, though, is good.
Get better.
6 months from the election, so isn't that what you
Well,
thinking?
That's next year.
Yeah, but and that'll be 6 months from the election would still be within the March. Is that right? No. It would be.
Yes, but that's not till next year.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's not in yet. So we'll see if that works or not.
Maybe the best period of his life could be getting out of the flipping White House, you know?
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen him do too much, so that might be the best period for us, too.
I mean, I adore him, but I wouldn't want that job. And I feel bad for anybody who has.
Yeah, it's a rough job, whoever you are.
So McCain was lucky.
McCain was real lucky. Well, I haven't heard much about McCain lately, but I'm sure his life is pretty rich and full right now.
Right.
You know. So.
So what's the philosophy in this that you get a reading and it says you're going through a tough period and challenges and yada yada? So, what's the level of free will?
Oh, free will is definitely there. Definitely. So with free will, you can make informed decisions. You can avoid some of the difficulties. You can minimize problems. Free will is very important. I've watched people, including myself, reduce or avoid negative karmic outcomes by making informed decisions.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But that's the key of the informed decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean... You don't need astrology if you're listening to your intuition and you've got a good intuition. Why do you need astrology? You don't. You know, I do question charts for people all the time. Question chart is, you know, should I go into this business? Should I go into a partnership with John? Should I marry Cindy? Should I sell my property in Saratoga? Whatever. Anything, right? And, you know, they're good. They work.
Yeah.
They work about 80-90% of the time. They're pretty accurate.
Well,
but do I use them myself? On rare occasions. I just usually follow my intuition.
But I wanted to share an example. January of 2008, you know, I said, Drew, you know, I get a feeling that we should get out of the stock market. So... You know, my intuition was saying that,
yep.
But then I...
And let's point out that you got a good intuition. Let's point that out.
But I still, you know, it was really great to call him and get the confirmation because then I did get out of the stock market. But, you know, it was just really great to have that second confirmation. Mm-hmm. But another time...
And it was good advice.
Yeah, it was really good advice. But in another time, a business partnership with my cousin, and Drew said, I was all excited. He said, oh, no, 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 no. And I said, why? He's the greatest guy. Martha, I'm telling you, don't do this don't do this business relationship. He's going to change his mind at some point. So if you're investing time and money, you better get a really solid contract. And because he gave me, you know, because of Drew's advice, we did get a very solid contract. Business, we had a contract, but it wasn't really a tight, solid one. And sure enough, 6 months down the road, my cousin changed his mind. And I said, well, you know, you're going to have to buy us out because we had a great contract. Mm-hmm. So it was, we use it for his questions and our updates all the time. It's very practical. And it really helps to know, like, okay, well, where am I going this year?
I have a couple in Thailand. And they're expats. They're from Canada. And they called me up and said, oh, there's this great property that we're going to buy in Thailand. I can't remember where now. And a bunch of our friends, we're all going to go and we're going to all buy the parcels together. And we're going to have this great property and we're going to develop it. I said, yeah, sounds great. So could you take a look at a question chart for us to see if it's a good idea, you know? And so I did. I said, no, stay far away from this state. This is absolutely dreadful. Don't go anywhere near this. So they were crestfallen, to say the least. And I think maybe, I can't remember, maybe 3 more months went by. Again came the call. We're getting more serious about that property now. I said, the one we talked about before? Yeah. Could you look at that again for us? And I said, sure, no problem. And I looked at it again. I said, oh, just stay far away from this. This is trouble about to manifest. But all our friends think it's a great investment opportunity. And I said, well, then, you know, do what your friends are doing. What? Well, do what your friends are doing. I mean, you know, you don't have to do what I tell you to do. Do what you like. I said, how much money are you putting in? $5 million. I said, $5 million. That's quite a bit. Yeah. I said, well, whatever you think. So then came the email, maybe 6 months later. Oh my God, Drew, thank you, thank you, thank you. You saved our lives. You saved us putting $5 million into property that the seller didn't own. So the seller was a flim-flam man and was representing property that he didn't own and that was owned by a number of other people, selling it to this group of expats who are going to develop it, you know, over somebody's dead body, so to speak. And now all that money is tied up. And I don't know all the ins and outs of what happened. I just know that my people were saved and they didn't put their money in. And, you know, you can say, well, we're going to get our money back. Well, you may well count the years, because that's what oftentimes happens. It might take years for it to be resolved. It's terrible. So, I mean, I have saved people millions of dollars. And then there's a couple that said to me, oh, Drew, you've saved me so much money. I'm going to cut you in on my next deal. I'm still waiting for that. It's never happened. Should I say anything more? It kind of does it.
What do you charge for a reading?
300.
And how long is it?
Hour.
You record it?
Yeah, I record it for you.
How much are the updates?
Same.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Any questions, comments? Anybody planning to live to 120?
Actually, I would live 120.
No, I didn't tell you this. You see, it's divided like this. Birth to 40, youth. 40 to 80, middle age. 80 to 120, old age. We're not supposed to be thinking about old age before the age of 80, officially.
That's a
good
rule.
Sounds good.
So does your chart say when your last breath's going to be?
Well, I know when mine is.
You do?
Yep, but I wouldn't necessarily tell you when yours is.
Right. Now, everybody does have different breaths. So you're...
I don't know how many they have.
Right.
If that's your question.
Right.
I don't know. I don't really focus on death. You know, I focus on life.
Right.
When you're dead, you won't need astrology. Trust me.
It won't matter anyway. Yeah.
It will not matter.
Yeah. You won't even know when your last breath came.
Yeah. Right. I was down at the very tip of India, in Cape Comorin, which they call Kanyakumari. It's absolutely fabulous place. You stand at the tip and you look directly south. And there you see the Indian Ocean. And then you look over there to the west, and there's the Arabian Sea. And then you look to the east, and there's the Bay of Bengal. And when the sun comes, you watch the whole thing. It's magnificent. It's a wonderful place. So I was there. And I came out of this temple one morning. And this guy was, "Yes, come. Come and let's look at just now, you know, he wants to do my palm." So, you know, he grabs me and leads me away across the, and the people are coming out to him, and all the locals are kind of looking at him, "Oh, yeah, right, you know." So he got somebody, you know, he got himself a tourist. Anyway, he sat down, he looked upon my palm, he said some things there, he said accurate things. And he said, 83, then finished. No more, finished. 83. I said, "Oh, okay." So then I went home, and I went to my hotel room, because, you know, on my laptop, and I carefully perused my birth chart. 83, spot on. It fits exactly. So whether I'll exit at 83 or not, who knows, but at least I'm mentally prepared.
And a friend of ours, Rasa.
Yeah, Rasa.
She was told 65, yeah. She was leaving, and she did.
Yeah. And yeah, she also called me up.
He didn't, yeah.
Well, I did.
This is way before.
I did not tell her she would pass at 65, but she was a friend of mine and a client of mine. So I heard that she was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and certain people wanted to, friends and loved ones wanted her to beat the cancer, naturally. And there was part of her that wanted to do that too. So I offered to do an update of her chart for her. I've known her since we were in our early 20s, so I really have some love for her. And her husband, of course, wanted her to continue on. So I set up the appointment with her. I got off the phone or email, I don't remember. And I immediately did a question chart myself about her. She wasn't going to survive. I looked at her chart. I didn't see it. She was gone. She was on her way out. So when I spoke to her to do a chart update for her, because she's my friend and because she's open to the idea, she's a spiritual woman, I said, "Rasa, you're not going to make it. As far as I can see, this is the end. So prepare yourself. If I'm wrong, wonderful. Great. But if I'm right, you'll be ready. And that's what you need to focus on." You can take all your, you know, your medicines and your health products, yeah, absolutely. But I don't think you're going to last. And then she died how long after? A couple weeks?
No, that was, I think you did that around the first part of October, and she died in the end of December.
2 months.
Really
hard. Yeah, she was, Martha and Bill were really, real
and
close
she
to her.
With us.
So, I mean, you can see.
But, you know, it was great, too, because she didn't have to do all the chemo and all the radiation.
Yeah.
And all that, you know. But, I mean, even, you know, Krishna provided for that, because even the doctors, I was there when they had the surgery, they opened her up and they went, and even the doctors said, but the husband was still pushing. She never got strong enough. So she was.
Yeah, it was interesting. Her husband never had me do his chart, and I knew her for years. And he knew that she would consult with me on occasion. I don't know what his attitude was, per se, but he never consulted with me, which is fine. And then when she passed, and I had predicted that, or, you know, pretty much went the way I said it would, and then he sent me an email and he says, okay, I'm ready now.
Really? Oh, I didn't hear that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Greg did?
Greg did.
Oh, great.
And who's the other one, the other girl that was there, the devotee girl? What was her name? Sue, this is a great story.
Oh. Okay.
So she is one of my clients. I can't remember her name now.
I know. Isn't it with the F?
Yeah. Yep.
But she's the one that was like the hospice.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a good friend.
Hospice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
She was there.
Okay. Yeah, I met
Sumati.
Her. Sumati.
Correct?
Yeah, Sumati.
So Sumati told me this story. This isn't about Rasa, but it's a very, very powerful story. She and her father had this relationship throughout her lifetime. In fact, they had a falling out, I think, for most of her life. She didn't even talk to the guy. You know how that goes sometimes. And near the end of his life, they made peace. And they began a dialogue and, you know, so it's better. And then he died. But it's not like everything got resolved. It didn't. So she had still a lot of anger and frustration toward the father figure, which also, you know, created certain situations with man, you know, having a hard time going into relationship, maintaining relationship, as that sometimes goes. So he passed, and she thought, you know, she was going to just have him cremated and finished. And something said to her, no. Take him to India. Take him to the Holy Land and pour his ashes into the Yamuna River, which is the sacred river. And she thought, nah, he doesn't deserve that. That old coot. Why would I do that for that guy? And, of course, you know, it's the good angel, bad angel on the shoulder. That's your father now. You better take his, you know, ashes to India. Okay. So she takes the ashes to India, right? And she's still got a lot of feelings in there, you know. And she walks out into the middle of the Yamuna. It wasn't very deep. I don't know what time of year. I don't remember. It wasn't very deep. So she walks out. And she takes the lid off of the urn. And still, she resists pouring the ashes into the river. There were no waves. The river was calm, flowing gently. And all of a sudden, a wave leapt up and right into the urn and pulled the ashes out and into the river. And with that, her heart burst open. And all the pain, anger, anguish, sorrow poured out into the river with his ashes. And she convulsed and gave thanks.
That's such a great story. I love that. Very
So sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do, even though you don't wanna do it.
But something, there was that part of her that knew that's what she
Well, it was it, but she was fighting
yeah,
it.
Resistance, but
yeah. Fighting it, even if she's in the water.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna take the lid off, you know.
Need a little help.
Oh man, and when
help.
Oh, and the update I did for her at that time, it was just transcendental. Because sometimes, you know, I mean, you're trying to help somebody naturally. You all try to help somebody, but sometimes another force comes in, and it takes you and it sweeps you up into it. And you know there's something going on that it's little or nothing to do with you. You're just kind of sitting there. And that's what it was like at that moment, listening to that story and what she was going through and what I could say to her at the time. It was all of a piece. You know, I felt very, very privileged to be a small part of that.
Even just to relay it, I mean, you can just feel, I mean, you can just picture her there, and the universe or higher being, something just gave that nudge to make it happen, and then her, it just
spirit.
Opened up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
metaphorically standing there for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, and all that pain just gone.
You know, it's one thing for a wave to, there weren't any waves. She says.
There weren't any needed.
Well, there usually isn't on the new moon.
So they were needed. They don't come.
Yeah. Then they were needed. And pulled the ashes out of the urn. Okay.
Well, that's a great story. Thank you, Drew.
Absolutely. I guess we'll end it with that. Yeah. That's it. That's our catharsis for the afternoon. So thank you very much.
Thank you.